Today, we are going to jump into a topic that I have had kind of, I guess, bubbling inside of me for a while now, and it's about how God goes about changing an individual life. And I think I've been thinking about this because I'm coming up on a lot of 20-year milestones. So like about 20 years ago, I moved here to Cincinnati, Ohio. About 20 years ago, I got married. This spring is our 20-year anniversary. About 20 years ago, I started what I didn't know at the time would be my first career at Procter & Gamble, which is why we were in Cincinnati. So all of these 20-year milestones have kind of caused me to look backwards a little bit and realize I am a totally different person than I was 20 years ago. And I don't just mean life circumstances, like I didn't have four kids 20 years ago. I mean like I am different than I was 20 years ago. And as I think about why, they all have one thing in common. Every way that I am different for the better started with the best words I have for it is God sort of pulling on my life or pushing on my life or drawing me to something better. Now, my husband might disagree. He might say that there's some super annoying things about me that are exactly the same as they were 20 years ago. But I mean the important stuff, not like the toilet paper holder stuff. I mean the big picture stuff. All the ways that I'm better started with a pull from God. And I believe that we have that in common because I've been around Crossroads for a very long time. And over that time, I know a couple of things about you if you're here. There's a lot I don't know, but one thing I do know is that you are not here because four generations of your family have come to this parish. I know that you're not here because of that. I also know you're not here because you're hoping maybe your name will show up in the church bulletin at the end of the year for perfect attendance. I know that you're not here because of that. I believe that the most common story that I have heard at Crossroads over more than 15 years is, I feel God. I think he's doing something. And when people hang around here for a while, they tend to have that common story. And it's actually one of the most powerful and unique things about this community, and I love it. And that's why today I want to talk about when we feel that happening, when we think that God is doing something, that he's present or pushing or pulling us to something better, what are his ways? How does he do it? What is he doing? And life with God is inevitably a life of change because we have a God who invites us to come as we are, but not to stay as we are. He offers us the power to choose something better. And the power is what we're going to jump into today. I have a question for you. What is something in your life that you would like to be better? Just whatever better means to you, just get that in your mind. And while you're thinking, I'll share one of mine with you. One of the things that I've been thinking about, I don't know, for the last year or two, maybe even a little longer than that, is I'd like to be a better sister. I have two brothers. One lives on the East Coast, one lives on the West Coast. We've never lived anywhere near each other. And over, you know, adulthood, as we've adulted, it's taken its toll. And I'd like to figure out, how do I be a better sister in the middle of this sort of arrangement that we have? And that's one of mine. I have a list. I'm sure you sort of can think of a few things off the bat. We all do. And I don't know what yours are. Maybe you'd like your anxiety to be better, or you'd like your team at work to function better, or you would just like to be a better parent, maybe yell at your kids a little less than you did last week. Whatever you're thinking of, whatever that is, God is offering us the chance to come toward him in something better. I believe that the desire for something better is actually in us because of God, because of the story of God. What we learn as we read about the human history in the Bible is that God created a man and a woman, Adam and Eve, and he actually created them in perfection. There was no need for them to yearn for something better. He created them in perfect relationship with him. He created them for perfect relationship with each other and in perfect harmony with the world around them. But he also gave them freedom, and what happened with that freedom is they made a choice, and that choice was to do something that was sort of against the perfect design of God for their life. And since then, I believe that you and I, as their big family tree descendants, have been looking for a way back to that perfection. We've been yearning for better. we kind of know that there is better. We think it's weird, right? When somebody around us has a very obvious opportunity for improvement and they kind of take a pass. Eh, I don't really want to get better. And you think, what is wrong with you? As Americans, we even like to say, I know that you'll be able to finish this sentence with me. We want to leave the world a better place for the next generation. There's something in us that wants better, and I think it's a good thing because I think it is God's story planted deep in our heart from a God who actually offers a way to get there. But we go looking. We feel the need for something better. I want to be a better sister. I want to have a better team. I want to do this or that better. And we find some answers in the world around us. Our culture actually has some answers to that right now. One of those, I think the biggest answer that we find as we look around us as to how do we get better in any area, our culture says you perform. That's how you get better. You perform to a gold standard. If you have a career, you know this. You know exactly where the levels are going. And there's a better life waiting for you at the top. If you want to play basketball like my son does, he wants to go to the NBA, well, congratulations. Now you need to be the rookie of the year or the MVP of the NBA or the NFL or whatever. Then we are obsessed with the standards and meeting them because we want the better. We want whatever is there that's better. Us women, I think we understand this in a tad more personal way because there's an awful lot of gold standards pointed at our body. And every woman I know at this time of year in the spring, three words strike fear in her heart, and those words are bathing suit season. The new suits are out. Here's all your gold standards, and you get to try them all on and see all the ways that you didn't perform. These women are going to show us how absurd it is to pursue that kind of gold standard.
This is what dudes get to wear to the beach. I mean, this is more than I wore to the prom.
Wow, you're wearing a practical outfit for what you have to do today.
Let me see how easily I can access a cooler.
Oh yeah, let's go.
Pretty good. Nothing's gonna make you feel worse about your body than the swimsuits that they make. I wonder if there's a way to make your butt feel too big, to really accentuate your love handles and make your bust feel inadequate. Oh yeah, here's one swimsuit. And they're just like trying to get you to buy the new swimsuit. Nobody thinks that they look perfect ever.
What's up? What's with these cutouts? It looks like you're like pressing something against a tennis racket.
Here, do not play volleyball in this, Kristen.
I'm starting to feel right about it. Hey, everybody, what's up? I'm just here for a teacher's conference.
Hey, nice.
How's things going? My kid's acting out. I can't imagine why.
Get out of the water! You don't have an adult with you!
You can't discipline in this. Then I'm going to put sunscreen and a patella brace because you don't know when your knee gives out.
This is for a bad knee when I'm on the beach.
If anybody asks me to play volleyball, I strap up.
On. Come on, you can't discipline in this. I love that one. Anyway, that's just a fun way to help us see what's true about every gold standard that we try to perform to. There's no real life there. There's nothing better waiting for us. What if I did? Would I be a better mom, a better wife, a better woman? Would I have a better summer, a better life if I could look better in that? No. And the same thing, they all go up in smoke. There's not anything better waiting for us there. So I actually believe, since we have long since seen these kind of perform and work it out standards, I think there's a brand new message emerging. And I've been noticing this a lot, and at first I feel relieved by this because nobody wants to spend their life trying to perform and never really getting there. So I kind of like this message on the surface, but if you look a little bit deeper, which hit me in the face when I saw these print ads one day, if you look a little bit deeper, you know that this message rings hollow too. This message is better. You don't need to be better. You are perfect exactly the way that you are. Too emotional? There's no such thing. Too defiant? No such thing. You, however you are today, are exactly the way that you should be. You just need to believe in yourself and everything will be better. Friends, there's relief in this. There really is. Like, after you've received in every area of your life all of these messages that you need to perform, when somebody finally tells you exactly like you are is enough, you want to take that. This isn't true. If you believe that this is true, I want you to stat, have a conversation with your best friend, your spouse, or your mom, who knows all the ways that you are too much of something. It just doesn't ring true to me when I dig below the surface. And it does one more thing. It actually steals from us the foundational idea of what we need from God. These two messages from our culture telling us how to get better, they steal the idea that we need anything outside of ourselves. We can perform to it on our own. We can deny that we even need to change and just believe in ourselves exactly the way that we are. But God says something different. He says we need a power outside of ourselves to get anything better than what we have today. We feel powerless, though. We feel stuck, but we have a God who actually gives us a way there. When I first started to follow Jesus many years ago, I didn't know this. I didn't know that a spiritual reality had changed inside me. I didn't have any information about it. So I would stumble along and try to follow the best way that I knew how, but I didn't know how. I didn't know that something changes when you start to follow Jesus. You have a power. And many of us don't know that because everything looks the same on the outside. And it takes us a longer time than it should to discover that God is offering this to us. And I want us to know and talk about it in depth today because I believe that He has better waiting for you right now. And I want you to be able to run toward it. So we're going to look at the book of Romans. And when we do, I need to orient you to the book because it was a letter written by a guy named Paul. And Paul was a guy who knew life changed. This was a man who had had his life utterly changed by meeting Jesus. And he's writing this letter to the Romans. And the first few chapters, he spends telling them, this is how you get into a relationship with the God of life change. And so he says very clearly, the only way is through faith in Jesus. And he lays that out. And then the letter makes a turn, right around chapter 5. In the middle part of the letter, which is where we're going to join him, is as he's telling these people, because of your faith in Jesus, this then is how you should live. And the reason I picked this part is because after being a part of Crossroads and being on a path with God changing myself, I believe that this is what most of us need to hear. I think that if you start coming around this community, sooner or later, God is gonna pull you into a basic faith in Jesus, a basic belief in who He is and what He did for you. And now we need to live that way. And if that is not you today, if you do not have faith in Jesus, that is totally fine. I'm so glad you're here. What you're about to hear is the life that is waiting for you when and if you make that decision. Because Paul writes some things and he starts this whole chain of things that he's going to tell us with three words. And he says, don't you know? And here's the thing. We need to know. I didn't know. We have to know and we have to remind each other what happens to us when we come to faith in Jesus. And this is what Paul says. He says the power for better, it actually comes through death. Listen to Romans 6. And just as Christ was raised from the dead by the glorious power of the Father, now we also may live new lives. Since we have been united with Him in His death, we will also be raised to life as He was. We know that our old sinful selves were crucified with Christ so that sin might lose its power in our lives. We are no longer slaves to sin. For when we died with Christ, we were set free from the power of sin. And since we died with Christ, we know that we will also live with Him. Now, Paul, he's a bit of a wordy writer. He uses 10 words when maybe 3 would do, but who am I to question it? This is a complicated passage, but one thing is not complicated. You die. When you put your faith in Jesus, there's a death that occurs, a spiritual death that occurs, but it doesn't stop there. He says you get raised into a new life. So again, I just didn't know. And my own story goes backwards into, if you were with us last week, you know that Kyle talked about the names that we give ourselves, and I didn't know that most likely to succeed had died. And I didn't know that best job out of college died. I didn't know liar died. I didn't know cheater died. I didn't know these people died when I put my faith in Jesus. Do you know? That's what Paul is saying. Do you know? Do you know that felon died? Do you know that addict died? Do you know that mentally fragile died? Whatever it is that your old self is named, that person died. When you put your faith in Christ, gone, done, over, for good. And he says something that should totally blow our minds. He says, so we also get to live a new life. He says the very power that rose Jesus up out of the grave for eternal life is now in you. That's unbelievable. The power for something better comes with death. Yes, the death of Jesus, but your death. He says you died and you got raised to new life. Something better is now within reach. And then he goes and he talks about sin. Okay, so he turns the page and he says, you're now no longer a slave to sin. When this goes down, this death that he says that happened to you, he says that the presence of sin might remain, but the power of sin is over. You are now not a slave. A slave doesn't make choices, friends. A slave follows their master. And our old master was sin. And he's saying that one, dead, gone. You're not a slave. The power for something better actually comes through God restoring what Adam lost for us. God restored our freedom to choose. The power for something better in your life is actually waiting for you behind the freedom that's been returned to you to make choices. He says you're now not a slave to sin. You don't have to follow where that was going to lead. You get to make some choices. There's some options open to you that were not before. You have power available, but you are going to have to choose it. I realized I had a choice. Lately, it was a few months back in my relationship with my brother. I told you I wanted to be a better sister, and I didn't know how, really know what that looked like. I could work the better sister checklist. I could do all the phone calls on the right, you know what I mean, the phone calls on the right day, the texts, you know, at the right moment, the visits on the right holidays, the better sister checklist. But I kind of had a sense that wasn't going to be what was going to work. Let me explain my brother to you. If you have a sibling that you're fond of, that's how I feel about my brother. This is my oldest brother, and we've always had a really special connection. We really worked on that because he's older than me, so when it probably didn't start happening until I was a teenager, and we just grew really fond of each other, and we've always shared a really, like, kind of authentic connection. And on paper, you would not think so at all. So if you wrote down a piece of paper about me, you might write things like, Mama four, married for a long time, lives in the suburbs of a Midwestern city, pastor at a church. For him, on paper, it looks like we shouldn't like each other at all. My brother is a brilliant musical theater director who's a married gay man who spent most of his life in Manhattan. We have very little in common on paper. But we had that thing, that X factor you just can't explain when you can connect with your sibling like that. And we were friends, like real friends. And over the last couple of years, I noticed that where we used to have something authentic, it was like feeling hollow and polite. Have you ever had a relationship make that turn where you kind of turn the corner into, oh, we're just doing the thing now. We're just doing the nice thing. I don't do that very well, so it was starting to bother me. And the more it bothered me, the more I started to talk to God about it. And this question was sitting on me. It was a question that I felt like maybe I needed to ask him, but I really didn't want to ask him. It was one of those questions, because what if there was an answer? And what if the answer was true? And then what if even asking it kind of killed the last thing that was still kind of there? And what if I did it all wrong and it all turned out bad? Because the question is, has my faith, or how I've lived it, has it pushed you away from me? Is that what's going on here? And I was terribly afraid to find out the answer that maybe that's what was going on. Because again, on paper, that's what you might guess, right? And over the last couple of years, I couldn't explain it any other way. I had a choice. I was either going to watch this relationship die, a slow, polite death, or, like I decided on a random Thursday afternoon, to call him up in his office and just open my mouth and ask him. And I was afraid, and I was uncertain, and I was pretty sure there was a terrible answer on the other end, and it was going to hurt, and it was going to be bad. And honestly, it was the spark of life. It was the thing that turned around a couple of years of hollow, because when I asked him, the answer was actually, in short, no, but there were some things to know. There were some things to know about what it feels like to be part of our family. And there were some things to know about what it feels like to live in this country for him over the last couple of years. There were some things to know. And somewhere along the line, as I listened, I realized later, oh my gosh, I think I'm becoming a better sister. And it had nothing to do with working the better sister checklist. And I promise you there was no life if I decided what us on paper would have told you, and I could have said something like, I guess he has a problem with me. That's probably what's going on here. He has a problem with me. Well, then it's his problem, whatever. I could have done that, and I know it wouldn't have brought life. The power for something better to happen in our relationship was hiding behind this random decision, this seemingly small thing that happened on a Thursday. And that's exactly what God does with these choices he gives us. He offers us the freedom to choose, and then he says, actually, it's underneath, behind, between these everyday decisions like that one. And it was a choice that only me and God would have ever known that I made. Because we're the only two that knew that was the question I couldn't escape. And I could have never made it. I could have just bypassed it. But at some point, I had to acknowledge, I think this is the thing I need to do. I want you to see how Paul talks about these everyday decisions that something better is waiting for us inside of. And he does talk about it, but he does it in a way that we need to talk about one word first, because he uses the word therefore to connect what he said before to what he's about to say. Now, grammar nerds unite. Therefore means for that reason, as a result of that thing. And I'm going to use it for you just so I'm totally sure you're with me on this, okay? Everyday example. I am the mom of a teenager, therefore, I have a new vocabulary. Are you with me? Okay. I am the mom of a teenager, fact, truth, exactly right. Therefore, as a result of that thing, I have a new vocabulary. So if you're with me and I say, it's time to dip, donkey, then you'll know what I mean is it's time to go. Seriously. If you tell a joke and it kind of falls flat and people look at each other awkwardly, I might go, that was a fat yikes. That was a fat yikes. I'm serious. These things happen in my house. So, you know, when we're done with the service, it's time to dip, donkeys. Get moving. And I am the mom of a teenager, therefore, I say these things. So you're with me. That's what therefore means. It's a connector. So Paul, he says five times, friends, five different ways. You died and you rose. You died and you have power. You died and you have amazing potential for new life. Therefore, and what do you think he's going to say? Does he say, therefore, just turn your eyes to Jesus? Or does he say, therefore, just let go and let God? No, friends, he says something totally different. He says, you died, and now you have the power for something better. Therefore, do not let sin control the way you live. Do not give in to sinful desires. Do not let any part of your body become an instrument of evil. Instead, give yourselves to God. For you were dead, and now you're alive. He does not say, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and do it better because of the therefore. He says, you have the power to do this. You can do this. Therefore, do it. do it. And whatever is standing between you and whatever you want that's better, I promise you it's sin. Yours, someone else's, the world's, the impact of it, whatever, whatever. It's sin. And he says, don't let that control things. Because you have a power that goes beyond that. It's bigger than that. I want you to be assertive with sin so that you can see that for yourself. And then he says, body parts. Why is he talking about our body parts? This is the literal translation, your body parts. Some translations you might read say mortal body. It's your flesh and bones body. He makes a point to say that because he knows as a result of what he said before, you died and you have new life. Sin is done with you for eternity. It doesn't dictate where you're going. It doesn't dictate your relationship with God. It is over, finished, complete, and the only place that sin has to go is your flesh and bones body. And Paul says, don't let it happen. You exert that new power. You do your will and be assertive with it because you will see for yourself that it's in you and you've been empowered by the Spirit of the living God. Now listen, I have a checklist for you. We're gonna go through it. It's called Allie's Body Part Checklist. And I've done a very unofficial assessment of all the body parts that show up the most in the Bible. This is close. These are important ones. You could have another one, and that's fine. Just think of it, and that's fine. But I'm gonna give you a checklist because I believe that God is inviting you into something better, and that that something better might have something to do with a decision that you could make about a body part. Are you with me? So, what if it's your eyes? I'm just going top down, people. Eyes, do you need to close them in rest? Is that what you need to do? I don't know. Maybe, like me, you need to stop watching that show. Seriously, I was watching a show for a while, really liked it. Every time I'd turn it on, I'd get that weird feeling. Ooh, it's kind of dark, it's kind of yucky. I'm not going to tell you what it is, because half of you would judge me for watching it, and the other half of you would judge me for turning it off. So, but I would get that thing I needed to turn it off. Something better for me was behind just not letting that into my eyes. Now, what about your ears? What voice do you hear? Is it the one from 25 years ago, the one that says you're harsh, you're controlling, you're an addict? I don't know, but is that the voice that's still in your ear? Or what music pumps into your car every time you get in it? Are there decisions you need to make about what you're hearing all the time? Or what about your mouth? I'm willing to bet this is more than half of us. Your mouth. Do you need to encourage the person that you don't want to encourage? Do you need to ask a question like I did? Do you need to say, I love you out loud? Do you need to make an apology that you really don't want to make? Is something better for you behind your mouth and the decisions that you're making with it? Everybody's favorite, is it your private parts? I could have phrased that a lot of different ways. I just feel like I need some credit for doing something tasteful. Your private parts, what are you doing with them? Where are they gonna be tonight, next Friday, with whom? Do you need to be more generous with them? Or do you need to be a lot more reserved? Is something better for you hiding behind your decisions about your private parts? Your hands, do you need to put them to work? Do you need to hug somebody? Do you need to shake somebody's hand? Do you need to clean the house with them for your spouse? Or maybe your feet, you need to step in front of somebody to protect them? Or you just need to make a decision to finally run the 10K. I don't know what God is saying, but I know he has the thing. It's just the one thing. It's not all the things. It's not the big checklist. And it's not putting your head in the sand and trying to convince yourself that the old broken you is actually perfect just the way they were. It's not either one of those. It's just the one. It's just the one thing. And God puts a choice. He actually goes out of his way to free us to make a choice. And then he says, make it. You have the power to make it. You have the power to choose and choose better. Choose something good. Choose life. And I am with you and you have my power and I will never leave you and we will do this thing together. That is our God. That is the God that's offering us life today. Why does he do it like this, you guys? Why not just let go and let God? Why not just turn your eyes to Jesus and everything's fine? Listen, I believe in a God who can and does and sometimes will suddenly change something, miraculously deliver you from something. I believe absolutely he can do that. But the picture that we get in the Bible is very different. It actually says, I want you to walk with me through the thing. And God, I think he does this for a couple of reasons, and they're all about relationship. He's trying to return us to what was lost all those generations ago. He wants the perfect relationship back. And so I believe he does this for a few reasons. I think he does this because he wants to train our ear, or the ear of our heart, to hear the leading of the Spirit. That's what Paul goes on to describe next in the book of Romans. He says, you, with your faith in Jesus and your new life, you need to train your ear to follow me by my Spirit. I think we need trained. And so he gives us lots of practice, lots of choices. One today, four tomorrow, eight on Friday, and he wants us to choose. And one of the reasons he does that is because he wants us to be convinced that the power in us is real. It's real. I didn't know it. I just didn't know it. I wouldn't try it. I wouldn't test it. I was afraid of it. And man, it is real. And you could look exactly the same on the outside. You put your faith in Jesus and different things start to happen because the power is real. And the last reason I think he works this way is, honestly, it's a reflection of what I think of as the kindness of his character. And I think what he's ultimately after is, I think he's ultimately after being Lord over all of us, over every day, over every decision, over every body part, behind every door. And I think he wants to be Lord over all of it, but he does it one thing at a time. One seemingly random Tuesday afternoon decision at a time, because I look back and if he had told me all the things that we were gonna do to get me to where I am today, I would have just laid down and cried. I would have said, there's no way, there's no way. And I can honestly think, I believe that will happen again. I believe if he told me all the things he was about to do to change me and form me and grow me, I would lay on the floor today and cry because we can't handle it. But he knows that and he's so kind. He's just after the one thing, just the one thing that's today, it's now. And it's because the power for better comes wrapped up in his grace. It comes wrapped up in his grace. He says, I will never leave you. I will always be with you. And as Romans 6:14, the end of this paragraph says, you are now under the freedom of God's grace. And grace knows that your brother isn't going to respond like my brother. And grace knows that even if you decide today, you might do something different tomorrow. And grace is going to be there with you in that. And you have endless opportunities, endless second chances, endless choices for better. And he will never walk away from us. And listen, somebody made this for me and I started thinking about it. I didn't first think of grace when I saw this picture. Someone prayed for me and these words say, fight the good fight. And it's somebody I don't know and she made this for me and I treasure it. And suddenly I began to realize, oh, this is a picture of grace. Because guess what we can't do if we don't have any power? We just get knocked out. We don't live to fight another day. We can work the checklist or put our head in the sand and that's all fine, but it isn't gonna lead anywhere. Grace says you get to fight another day and I'm gonna be there with you. And even if you get knocked down, you're gonna get up again and we're gonna do the thing. And the best person that I've ever been around professionally that did this was our friend Kathy that Brian mentioned earlier. Guys, I was in a meeting with her. She was a woman of grace, but she was a woman of freaking action. Kathy did not sit by. She was done talking. It was time to move. And we were in a meeting together one time, and she was like, we were only 28 minutes into an hour meeting, and she does the like, this meeting's over. We're done here. And we're like, what are you talking about? We got another half hour. And she goes, we just said the thing. We need to go do the thing. We got 32 minutes to start doing the thing. We just said what we thought God wanted us to do. Let's do it. And I'm coming with you. That's what grace does. She didn't just hold the door open and go, good luck. she was like, I'm coming with you. And I know you know what I want you to do, and I'm going to come along, and Grace is going to ensure that we get to something better. So let me ask you, what are your body parts doing today? What are they going to be doing tomorrow? If you have faith in Jesus, then you have the power to choose something better. And I hope you do. I hope you use it to choose life. We're going to sing this song again that we sang earlier about the power of Jesus. And I hope that maybe now we have like an extra dimension to this song, because it is about his amazing power that lives in anyone who puts their faith in him.
When you wrestle with this heart again, when you wrestle with